Oh, there is so much to get to on this Wednesday podcast. I don't even know where to begin. Goodman and Parrish are back with me, and from everything to Goodman's run-in with Boeheim, we will definitely get to that, to Indiana losing, the Gonzaga conversation. We are actually going to legitimately have reason to talk about Memphis basketball on this podcast. All sorts of stuff to get to. Good morning, fellas. Riveting. Good morning. How you doing, guys?
Wonderful. What's up with you, Matt Norlander?
Just enjoying the week here. Actually, it's stormy as hell up here in Connecticut. I think we're getting the rain side of the that Midwest storm you guys hit. And Goodman actually was able to fly home. He was on G-Chat on the plane telling me he was afraid they might actually end up going down here. But I'm glad that you landed and all is safe, Goodman.
That was good. Flying out of Chicago was a little scary, but they're used to that stuff in Chicago. I'm just wondering if there's a big dark cloud over Gary Parrish's mother's house today.
Oh, she's heartbroken. The Tigers, they broke her heart.
Yeah, man. Listen, we can start right now. Memphis basketball, why wait any longer? Loses at Xavier. Xavier's not a great team, but they're not a bad team. They've proved themselves okay. And I'm actually going to let Gary talk first and speak on behalf of Memphis, because now we're going to have a conversation where this is a Memphis team with a gaudy record, but it doesn't have a lot of good wins. Some people think it should be, you know, out of the tournament right now because of its lack of good wins. Others think it should be on the bubble. After last night, Parrish, where do you stand in your city and with this team?
I don't stand with them at all.
Okay.
I'm joking. No, let me be clear. There's nothing crazy about losing at Xavier, right? Last night, Florida lost at Tennessee.
Agreed.
And Indiana lost at Minnesota. And though I do think Minnesota's better than Xavier and better than Tennessee, it just shows that when you go on the road in college basketball, you're susceptible, especially to a quality team. Remember that Xavier, they beat Butler earlier this year in that arena. They nearly got VCU last weekend. So there's nothing in a vacuum embarrassing about Memphis losing at Butler. But when you're Memphis and you've got 118 straight and you've gotten back into the top 25, 18th in one of the polls, last night's an opportunity for you to maybe not prove you're worthy of the number 18 ranking, but certainly an opportunity to prove you're not unworthy of it. And so when you lose that game, if there's been people throughout the 18-game winning streak questioning what they really are, you could look at them and go, okay, they're playing better, and they seem to be playing hard, and they seem to be getting along, but they still haven't really beaten anybody unless you want to count Southern Miss as somebody. To the extent that those people existed, and they did, one of them is here on the podcast, if you take a loss at Xavier, then it gives people who doubted you and who was skeptical of your record to say, see, I told you so. They're just not that good. And so that's why last night was so troublesome for Memphis, is because it, at least in some people's minds, confirms what they had been thinking all along.
They just haven't beaten anybody. I'm not going to say they don't have talent. We know they have a lot of talent. But, like, they've beaten nobody. I've been saying it all year, fighting with Pastner. His league stinks. It's like the America East. It stinks. If you put Vermont and Stony Brook in Conference USA, they're going to battle for second place this year.
Listen, CUSA, it's not having a good year.
It's the league.
No, it's terrible. All right, listen, because Josh has gotten on this little I think at some point he's just trolling. Even Memphis fans – like, though they love him, well, I'm not sure they love him today, but up until about 7 Eastern last night, they loved him to pieces, right? And they're even tired of hearing him talk about, you know, Marshall's the most talented team in the country. Like, he literally said that 2 weeks ago.
He did not say that.
Oh, yes, he did.
He did not really say that. Come on.
I'm telling you. We do whole radio shows in Memphis based off the outlandish things that Josh Pastner says. Now, I think on some level, he's just messing around. Like, because he's heard us so many times say, why do you keep saying that? So he's just going to keep saying it. Plus, he's a positive person, always interested in talking people up. But I say all that to say this. Contrary to what Josh Pastner tells me, you, or anybody else, Conference USA stinks, all right? I mean, it is awful. The other day, he said it was as good as it's ever been since the breakup. In reality, it's about as bad, or maybe as it's the worst it's been since the breakup. And so
You can't even debate it, honestly. I have other coaches in the league telling me how crappy this league is. Not on the record, because, again, you can't do that. But if you're Josh Pastner, just shut your mouth on this. Just stop saying you deserve a 5 seed or anything like that until you go out and you beat a tournament team. And they have yet to do so, although the Seas win last night in Florida was the best thing that's happened to Memphis, I don't know, in a while.
Right. Well, that's
And here's the thing. When you talk about your league or your winning streak, the way that Josh talked about his league and the winning streak, you're sort of setting your – because there's people who, A, just don't believe you, right? They just don't – we don't believe you. And so when you start talking about it in that way, so aggressively, like he went on one – there was the one quote where he actually called you out. He was like, Jeff Goodman doesn't know anything about our league. All right? And then though he was joking around with me during a postgame interview on CBS Sports Network – he's joking around. Listen, it's all in good fun with him, all right? So it's not like he's – when Boeheim – it's nowhere close to like Boeheim calling somebody an idiot, right?
We laugh at him.
Right. We laugh at him, right? Because it's all in good fun, and he genuinely is like maybe the nicest human on the planet. But when you call Jeff Goodman or when you say that Jeff Goodman doesn't know anything about your league, doesn't know what's going on with your league, when you tell me in a post-game interview when I say, hey, you finally were able to put a team away. And he said, Gary, you're the only person that gets honest for not blowing people out. This league's hard. We're not just – when you start contradicting people's opinions in a public way, and Memphis fans should learn from this as well. What it does – and I'm not going to tell you whether it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's human nature. It has people waiting for you to slip so they can remind you, hey, remember what I said before? Looks like I was right. And so if Josh and Memphis fans would have just stayed along these lines, like last night I saw Mark Few, Scott Van Pelt had him on SportsCenter by phone after Indiana loses. And he asked Mark about being number one in the country. And he said, we'd love it. We'd love to be number one. It'd be a great honor for our school. It's something we've never done. And then the question got around to, should you be number one? And Mark's answer was, I don't know. I think there's a group of about
teams.
There's about 8 or 9 teams that and we're all in the same group. He said, I think we're one of that. We're in that group. But, he just sort of he acknowledged the honor and acknowledged how good his team is without trying to force it on you. So if Memphis fans and keep in mind, I live here, so I have to deal with this stuff a lot more than you guys do. People coming, calling into my radio show, telling me I'm stupid for only having Memphis ranked 25th or before that for not having Memphis ranked at all. Right. You're dumb. You're trying to be the anti-Homer, so on and so forth. If they would just come at it from a reasonable perspective. And I understand asking fans to be reasonable is probably unreasonable. But here's all you have to say is go, listen, we're winning every game we're playing. And we're blowing people out. And we look good on paper. And the advanced statistics are improving. Now, if we were in the Big Ten, would we have this record? I don't know. Probably not. ACC, probably not. But there's nothing we can do about our league affiliation. All I can tell you is that our team's winning every game it plays. We think we're pretty good, but ultimately it's going to come down to when we get in the NCAA tournament and are matched against presumably power conference schools, and we'll see how it goes. But if people want to rank us, I think we deserve it because we've won so many games and we're very clearly passing an eye test. But if people don't want to rank us, I understand because we don't have what most people consider quality wins. And so, I get that, and we'll just work like crazy. And that's because we blew opportunities early, and so we're going to work like crazy to try to prove those people wrong. Then you lose at Xavier, and nobody's waiting to say, I told you so. But when you rank Memphis 25th, and the extreme fans who are on Twitter are saying Jeff Goodman's dumb and Gary Parrish is a anti-Homer and both of you are stupid and how did you even get your jobs, you hacks? And
anti-Homer.
Then you know what happens? You're sitting around going, and I talked about this all week, last week and the week before. I said, listen, I came on the radio Monday after we'd ranked Memphis 25. We left them where they were. And I said, listen, I could explain to you in great detail for the next 20 minutes why we didn't move Memphis up. All right. But it would be the exact same thing I told you last week. So let's not go through it again. They won a lot of games, but they do not have quality wins. And we tend to look at entire bodies of work and entire body of work is very, very questionable. And so if you would have just but when your comeback to that is you don't know what you're talking about. You're a hack. You know, you're, you know, you know, you don't even, how did you even get your job? Then what that does is it puts people in a position for when you have a bad performance, particularly on the ESPN2 stage against what is the best team you've played in a while, or at least the best team outside of Southern Miss that you've played in a while. Those people are ready to say, see, you played another good team out of league, and look what happened. Same thing that always happens, not only this year, but every year. And so I think on some level, Memphis fans, and even Josh, you know, he put himself in this position.
Look at Goodman. I mean, was that not a well-lubricated, prepared radio rant from Parrish right there? I
oh,
mean,
yeah.
That,
oh, by the way, that's that the opening like, segment to my radio show.
That was like eight straight minutes, dude.
Oh, no. That's you want to hear it again? Tune in to 92.9 FM ESPN at 4 o'clock.
But Parrish is the one, and I'm going to blame him on this forever. I mean, like, he wore me down on ranking Memphis. Like, I was like, I do not want to rank Memphis. I will not rank him all year now. They didn't do anything in the preseason. We can't rank him. And he says, okay, yeah, no problem. This was back in, like, January. And then all of a sudden, you know, 2 weeks ago, I think we need to rank Memphis. I think we need to.
When that happened was it came after the blowout win at Southern Miss, and though
Miss is so great, Gary.
Listen, they're not so great, but they are at least when you look at the numbers. Norlander can back me up on this. At the time, Southern Miss had good numbers. At the time, going down to Hattiesburg and winning, and I know this sounds like a dumb statement, but at the time, going down to Hattiesburg and winning was the equivalent. I'll put it this way: it was the equivalent to going to Notre Dame and winning. Look, Matt, help me here. If you looked at the advanced numbers at the time.
Oh, stop. You're out of your mind. You're comparing a win in Hattiesburg to a win in South Bend?
I'm telling you, according to the advanced statistics at that time.
I don't care. I don't care about the advanced statistics.
Hey,
okay?
Good. I think everybody understands you're anti-math at this point. All right? We got that. All right? No, I'm just telling you that at the time, that looked like that was considered – By the numbers that the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee uses and a lot of smart people use, that was considered a quality road win.
So you're telling me if Notre Dame plays Southern Miss today, last week, last month, you're telling me Southern Miss, because of the advanced statistics, is the favorite. They're the better team.
Matt Norlander, I know you got KenPom like caught up on a screen 24 hours a day. Go tell me where both those schools are.
Well, subjective.
I don't care. You don't understand. I don't care.
But a lot of people care. So you tell me. Okay, Southern Miss is 55 at KenPom right now, and Notre Dame is 43. That means here's what that means. If you put those schools on a neutral court, Notre Dame would be a one possession favorite.
Yeah, and subjectively, Notre Dame is tougher at the time. Parrish does have a point, but I agree with Goodman
Okay. While we're on this advanced statistics thing,
oh god, we don't have to go down this road.
No, I want to go down this road. I want to go down this road for 30 seconds. I'm going to quickly read you who Southern Miss has beaten, and you.
You're losing it. Listen, nobody is debating you about whether Southern Miss is awesome or not. Nobody's debating you about who Southern Miss is beating. All I'm telling you is at the time.
How do they have those numbers? Tell me how they get those numbers when they've beaten Western Kentucky, Georgia, who stinks, Sam Houston State, UC Irvine, Liberty, Denver. They lose to New Mexico State. They lose to Louisiana Tech. They beat Grambling State. That was a hell of a win.
Hey, if you're frustrated with that, Southern Miss is 21 spots higher in the RPI than they even are in KenPom. I mean, it's even more misleading.
Yeah. How about this? Southern Miss right now is at KenPom. They're in between Villanova and Providence. We've seen good teams lose at Villanova and at Providence this year. And so all I'm telling you is that if you take an unbiased and throw away your stereotypes and labels about what you think Southern Miss is, as opposed to what you think Villanova and Providence and Big East schools are, according to an unbiased calculation that is pretty damn good at predicting what teams are, that's pretty good at it, over and over. Like, if you look at the KenPom numbers every day, they match up to the point spreads almost every day, and you got to at least agree with me that the people in Vegas who put numbers on these games know what they're doing. There is literally no difference between winning at Villanova, winning at Providence, and winning at Southern Miss. That's the only point I was trying to make.
They beat William Carey and Dillard. I mean, those were big wins, guys.
What do you do when a kid won't listen?
Those were big. Absolutely.
Hold on a second. Matt Norlander, you're a smart guy, right?
Sure. What's up?
Okay. And is there anything that I just said that's untrue?
Absolutely not, I'm afraid. Now, listen, you both have good points here. We don't need to get on a five-minute rant about Southern Miss. I don't even know.
Here's the thing. If you put that, you know what the KenPom numbers, you can hate them if you want to. I got that, right? But they line up pretty well with the point spreads. In fact, like, go right now,
right.
Go look at all the point spreads for the games tonight, and then go look at what KenPom projects, and the numbers are basically the same. They're off a point or two at most.
What I'm going to do, well, I probably won't because I think I let my KenPom subscription expand. No, actually, I haven't. But anyway, I'm going to look at last year's KenPom. Can somebody send me last year's?
Arguing against something that's factual, like that's what you're arguing against, like that we breathe oxygen, like it's proven to be true. If you put Villanova and Southern Miss on a neutral court tonight, the game would be a pick 'em. Now that doesn't mean that you wouldn't pick Villanova and that Villanova wouldn't win the game and that Jay Wright's better than Donnie Tindall. Okay, all those things might be true. I'm just telling you, according to Las Vegas, if you put Villanova and Southern Miss on a neutral court tonight, it would be about a pick'em game.
Well, I'm talking about Notre Dame and Southern Miss, first of all. I'm winning in South Bend and winning in Hattiesburg.
According to KenPom, which means according to Las Vegas oddsmakers, there's not a whole lot of difference between those.
And I'll tell you, if Notre Dame and Southern Miss played 10 times, I think Notre Dame would win 9 of them.
Well, you're statistically on the wrong side of that argument, but that should surprise nobody.
Okay, I had like a couple of points on Memphis, but like forget it. Like we are 17 minutes into this damn thing.
Yeah, we gotta move on. Otherwise, the only person that's gonna listen to this podcast is Gary's mom
and Josh Pazner.
I want to just pose this. Okay, Memphis beat Tennessee. Memphis is 24-4, still undefeated in its league. And if it does that, hey, you know, credit, because we don't get many teams each year that are able to do that. But all right, so would you take Memphis right now? Or would you take a 17-10 Tennessee team that just beat Florida, that's beaten Kentucky? Bama's not that great, but it beat Bama. It beat Xavier. Memphis lost to Xavier. Who, you know, let's just go total vacuum.
I don't want either one.
Vacuum. Let's just say vacuum. Hypothetical. This is the last bid. Who are you taking, Memphis or Tennessee, for the final bid?
Memphis.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Here's the other side of the argument, and this is like something that you can't ever get away from as long as you play in a league like Conference USA, is that, you know, some of it is, it's just like getting at bats in a baseball game. You know, like if you only get 3 at bats, you might go 0 for 3. But if you get 10 at bats, you're not going to go 0 for 10. You might only go 3 for 10, but you're at least going to get like 3 hits, right? If you're decent.
Sample size.
Memphis gets so few at bats, and their at bats come in November for the most part, that it's possible to just strike out in those, and you can't ever make up for it. They don't get a 4th at bat, and a 5th at bat, and a 6th at bat. Now, I'm not saying that's an excuse, because that's the way it is, and it's what John Calipari had to deal with that as well. But I do think when you talk about, you know, Tennessee's beaten Kentucky, and Tennessee beat Florida, and Tennessee, some of that is because Tennessee's had a lot more at bats than Memphis. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, you're talking sample size. That's a huge factor. And, you know, Tennessee also does have a win against Wichita State.
Sure.
It's getting to an interesting situation with the Vols, and they did this last year as well. They get 2 road games, easy ones, Georgia and Auburn. If they win those and they beat Missouri, they're going to be in the field entering into the SEC tournament. SEC tournament. That's something a lot of people didn't see. So good on Konzo Martin for doing that. Let's transition here.
Please.
that was good stuff though. That was really, really good stuff in it. Actually, I got like chills as Parrish was talking about sample sizes and KenPom and actually the pragmatics of the empirical data. Okay. Gonzaga. Listen, 2 losses, fewer than anyone in the country. Very few teams even have 3 losses right now. It's like Duke and no one else, and like Louisiana Tech. So I'm actually a big proponent of Gonzaga as a number 1 seed. It doesn't have a great strength of schedule, but it has, you know, it beat 5 Big 12 teams, hasn't lost in the WCC. It does have a big road game against BYU on Thursday. To me, they look like a one. Goodman, I'm going to give you the floor here because Parrish has taken up typically 70% of this podcast so far. Gonzaga, should they be a one right now? Do you think they'll end up as a one?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have as much right as just about anybody. I don't think they've – certainly the WCC isn't as good as it's been over the last few years. BYU's just okay, probably not a tournament team. St. Mary's, by virtue of beating Creighton, became a tournament team, but prior to that, hadn't really beaten anybody. You know, so it's hard to tell, but we've both seen them. Gary saw them lose to Illinois earlier in the year. I saw them almost beat Butler. They were one inbounds away from beating Butler at Butler. I think based on their talent and what they've done, I think you could certainly make a valid case that they deserve to be a number one seed today. But I think they still – one slip up for Gonzaga, and they're off that number one line.
Is that – okay, but – okay. Let's say that slip up is the WCC title games against St. Mary's. I would probably still argue that they would deserve a one in that spot. You think they'd be a number two?
Well, it depends what the other teams do.
Right, I mean, of course.
Listen, Michigan's still got to play Michigan State in Indiana before the Big Ten tournament. So yeah, they could have a couple more losses. You know, let's see what Duke does when they get Ryan Kelly back. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still – to say that now, again, does Gonzaga deserve a number one today? Yes. There's still a lot of basketball left. I'll be out at the WCC final in Vegas that Monday. And, I really like this team. I do. I think it might be Mark Few's best overall team, and especially when you put it in the current landscape.
I think it is.
Best opportunity to go deep in the NCAA tournament.
Agreed. And that kind of pressure we'll get to on a future podcast as we get close to the tournament. Gary, last night I had written about just, you know, I wrote about Florida and Indiana and their 1-seed chances, and we can get to that collectively here. But I just love the fact that right now you have 12 possibilities for teams that can be number one seeds. Just depending on how things break, there are still 12 teams that, hypothetically, if they won out, would have a case for a number one. I don't know. I honestly don't know if we've ever had a season like this where you've got 12. I mean, we're at the second to last day of February here, and there's still a lot of uncertainty. I mean, even Indiana, right? You know, they are certainly a number one right now. There's no doubt about it. But Indiana's got to play at Michigan, and then if they lose in the semis of the Big Ten, there's certainly a possibility IU doesn't get a number one. Isn't it a really good thing for hoops that we have this much? I don't want to say it's parity because I think they're good teams, and I think there's a separation there from those teams and the ones that'll get fives and sixes.
I don't know. I mean, I guess you can look at it from however, you know, perspective you want to. I mean, like last year was fun, and we had a clear, you know, dominant team in Kentucky. This year, I think I don't want to say the first time in a while, but it's rare that this happens, that if you get put in a certain region, it almost doesn't matter who else is in your region. You can feel at least reasonably okay that maybe you can get to the Final Four. Like last year, if you're sitting on Selection Sunday and you're watching Greg Gumbel and he puts in the number one seed in the South is Kentucky or wherever they were. And then it goes, and the number eight seed in the South is whatever, you know, then you go, all right, well, we're done when we get to the second game. You know, like we ain't beating them dudes. And I don't think there's anybody that you look at this year who just terrifies you. Like, you know, like who scares you? You can, you know,
that's
like
a great point. No, that's a great point for the, you're right, for the regions. It's like, everybody's going to be like, okay, we got a chance.
Okay, yeah, right. Like you're going to go, you know, you're going to, okay, all right, you're in the region with Indiana. All right, Butler beat Indiana on a neutral. Why can't we beat Indiana
Wisconsin
on a neutral?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, and Wisconsin won at Assembly. And so you go, all right, and there's the number one seed, Gonzaga. Well, okay, Gonzaga, fine. Like, let's go.
Right.
And so I think that's going to be fun. Here's the team, though, when we talk about ones, and let me just to emphasize, reemphasize some of your points. Gonzaga, if they went out, no question, not only will they be a one, but they should. They're not only 5-0 against the Big 12, they're 5-0 against the teams that are second, third, fourth, sixth, and eighth in the Big 12. They beat the top four in the Big 12 outside of Kansas, and they destroyed Oklahoma. So they're worthy. You know, again, I don't know that they're the best team in the country or even the second best team in the country, but they're in the conversation. If they went out, they're going to have the resume and the wins to be worthy of that one seed. The other team, though, watch out, because people have sort of, you know, after Michigan went through that bad stretch – they sort of moved off them. They still get, as Jeff pointed out, Michigan State at home, Indiana at home. They win both of those, and then, you know, the Big Ten tournament's just going to be wide open. I'm going to be at that one in Chicago. And then when the, you know, they're going to be, you know, maybe the number one overall seed still is on the table for Michigan. So it's going to be
roll from here. You're right.
And here's the thing. Like, I don't know that they're going to beat Indiana and Michigan State both at home. They're going to be favored in both of those games. According to the odds makers, they should win both of those games. And then if they happen to be the team that wins the Big Ten tournament, they go from being somebody everybody was questioning
number one
in
overall.
The middle of February to the number one overall seed.
Does Ken Pom have them as a favorite in every game for the rest of the year?
Who, Michigan? I'll bring it up real quick.
No, I'm just messing with you. I'm not.
Oh, I know, but
no, I don't care if you're messing. I'm asking.
Actually, right now on the March 10th, right? They play Indiana.
Yeah.
They're projected as a 74-73 loser. So,
that's crushing.
It is crushing. I understand. But obviously, I just think it's very reasonable to think they went out. And if they do win out, they could be the number one overall seed.
Writing that down right now. 74-73. Okay, 74. How many points does he have Trey Burke scoring?
I don't be an
that
ass.
Kind of breakdown. I can't tell you that right now.
Oh, man.
Don't be an ass. This is why Bayheim went after you. And I'm going to segue right there because Syracuse is a team that was a possible number one. Now they won't get it. But you were in Milwaukee Monday night. And you came so close to getting that moment. Bayheim, he almost went there, but he didn't quite. I mean, he seemed a little feisty, but he didn't quite fully dress you down there. What's up? You know, what is up with Bayheim? He's always been cranky, but to me, now, he seems jaded. And, like, these clips, like, they make for good fodder, and they make for good copy. But in my opinion, since the fine stuff, he just, I don't know. He seems a little more bullish, like he's just not the same kind of lovable cranky Bayheim he once was. Maybe I'm misreading that, but do you see it the same way, Goodman?
You know, as you get older, some people get a little bit more ornery.
Example A, right here on the podcast, of course.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. I hit my 40s and that was it, you know? Listen, the bottom line with Bayheim is he calls out cats a couple weeks ago. ESPN's Andy Katz and calls him.
Hey, everybody knows who Andy Katz is. You don't have to be identifying him.
I just want to identify him. I want to do right by my colleague Andy Katz,
who unblocked you on Twitter, by the way.
It was a great day yesterday. If you can notice that I've got like a pep in my step today, it's because Andy Katz no longer has me blocked, so I can follow him on Twitter if I would like to, and he is now following me. So like, I'm feeling good about myself today. I mean, I hope you can tell.
We can tell.
Without a doubt, dude.
Oh, this is a great day. Not a good day. This is a great day. Anyway, Bayheim calls Katz an idiot and disloyal. And we've been through this, I think, before. I don't know if we did on the podcast, but it was uncalled for. It was over the line. Katz was doing his job. He asked about the Bernie Fine situation multiple times. And Bayheim is one that if you keep asking, a lot of times – He'll talk. He'll eventually wear down, and we know that about Bayheim. Anyway, the other night, they lose to Marquette, had a chance to blow him away twice and kind of break open the game. Didn't do so. After the game, a young reporter from Syracuse, Michael Cohen, I believe is his name, asked Bayheim about why he didn't play Daywon Coleman. Big kid who's been out the last couple months with an injury, but he was cleared to play. And Devontae Gardner, the 290-pound big guy from Marquette, the wide body, was having his way with the long, athletic bigs of Syracuse. So why not throw in Daywon Coleman? It was a great question, I thought. Daywon Coleman's big, strong, not a great defender, but at least would give him a different look. That started to agitate Bayheim. I followed it up right after with a question about leadership. Another valid question, just about, hey, listen, are you worried? Your team has lost more than they've won over the last month. Are you worried right now that you don't have a strong enough leader to kind of stop this run, to gather the troops, so to speak? And he kind of lost it. You know, he just kind of went on and, you know, who are you to question me coaching and all this stuff? And then he ended it with a comment about, you know, go win your Pulitzer and looking at us. And, you know, it was entertaining, to be honest. I enjoyed it. I had no problem with it. Listen, I'm 41 years old. If he wants to come at me in a press conference, so be it. But whatever Michael Cohen is, 20-year-old kid who either, I think, just maybe got out of school. He works for the Daily Orange.
That's the school paper. He's still in school.
But he's working also for Syracuse.com. So I don't understand the dynamic there. But whatever.
Called an internship, but yes, continue.
He's in his low 20s. And you don't need to go after a kid like that. He's doing his job. He's asking questions. And it was an entertaining. I mean, I had an entertaining day. I mean, I had that in the post game, and in the pregame, I kind of went at it with a coach. Another verbal sparring match. I'm not going to go into it.
Oh, you're going to tease us like that?
I can't do it. I can't do it. But I in the tunnel before the game.
You and Buzz Williams finally get down and wrestle it out, man.
Not Buzz, but I will not go into who it was.
Okay. All right, fair enough. I don't know. To me, it's just I don't know. I don't know if he's still enjoying the job like he once did. There just seemed to be more. He's seeking more and ready to combat a little bit more. And maybe it is just age, and that's just natural. But I don't know. It's just something that I.
If you're gonna be a D-head, make sure you win.
That's
Do it after wins. But when you do it after losses, you just come off as just sour. And it'd be one thing if either question was out of line, right? But both those questions, best I can tell, were very reasonable post-game press conference questions. And so, you know, coaches all over the country after losses get asked about these types of things every single night. Just answer the question and move on.
Yeah, agreed. And we will move on here. Anything over the past week? I mean, it's been a busy week, and it's been filled with, I don't know, different kinds of headlines. As we head into March, I think more craziness is on the way. I think that this season is still proving to be one of the best ones. I was kind of hoping Minnesota would lose last night so I could bring that up again, but they won. They're going to be okay, and I can now say my question was a bad question. See, I can cop to that. No hard feelings on my end. But Parrish, anything you want to add to this podcast? Because I always love giving you the floor. As much as you love me asking you questions, sometimes the magic just comes from you and within.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Okay, all right, good deal. Goodman, you wanna react to the officiating stuff from Kansas Iowa State? I got more tweets on talk about Gonzaga and talk about Kansas Iowa State and Iowa State getting screwed the other night.
Yeah, but I feel bad. I mean, listen, George Niang was in a perfect position there, drew the charge, terrible, terrible call. They admit they made a mistake. You know, Big 12 Curtis Shaw, I believe, went out and admitted his guys screwed up. And listen, until the rules change, until the NCAA takes over or the conferences take over and pay these refs benefits and make them full-time employees, this time of year is when that stuff generally starts to pop up. Remember the first, 2 months, guys, we really didn't have any issues. I think the only one was, Colorado, Arizona.
Right.
Right.
That was it. And until that point, and that game was late, too. I mean, that game was –
we're going to get bad officiating, a lot, right? But, it's sometimes it's just, bad. The officials were just bad from start to finish. And I gather that's what this was in this game as well. But when there is one call that literally dictates the final score, I think that's awful. And in this game, there was one call that, sometimes we get the benefit of slow motion replay in HD. And I get that. But this one looked like a clear charge live. Like when it happened, I said charge. I think you said charge. I think everybody said charge. And the refs call nothing. And by the way, something's got to be called there. You call a block or a charge, but you got to call something. He just swallowed his whistle. And to me, those are the ones that are most frustrating because, a lot of times you can say, listen, the refs gave my big two fouls in the first half. We had to play without him for too long. And but that's just we think they were two bad calls, but it wasn't just such an obvious call. One call at that moment that, it can probably decide the game or at the very least, if it goes the other way, which is the way it should have gone, you win the game guaranteed because you're up two and now you're shooting free throws at the other end with 4.9 seconds to go. So the game's over basically at that point. And, so then it leads to Iowa State.
It's sad because Iowa State's in the bubble. That's the hard part of all.
It's sad because little Hoiberg's crying in the stands.
Oh, yeah.
And our best friend to cry.
Watch our best friend Carol. You remember Carol from the Final Four, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Our best friend Carol Hoiberg, who might be the
coolest basketball wife out there, I think.
I think we labeled her the coolest basketball wife in the country, is having to hold and comfort her child who has just watched his favorite team and his father's team and his father's alma mater and his mother's alma mater take a loss that should have been a win. It's just a devastating night all the way around.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. And I always – some people have issues.
Hey, did they throw stuff at Self after the game?
Somebody sent me a picture of a guy, like an Iowa State fan, like going after Self, but I don't know. You couldn't see Self, really, as much as you could just see a crazy-eyed Iowa State fan.
He just saw a guy. I mean, there's actually college basketball's got this thing now where grown-ass adult men are finding their way onto the floor. There was that. There was like a 70-year-old that rushed the court at Minnesota last night. College hoops has got to get a hold of itself and keep the old man off the hardwood.
No, let him come on.
Oh yeah, you want that?
Guy rushing the court, that's awesome.
Septuagenarians on the hardwood. Yeah, you're a big proponent of that. All right, good deal.
Oh, I think Boeheim should be rushing the court.
Can you imagine? We'll wrap up with this. I wanted you guys to give me your players of the year, like your All-American team top five right now, because I just want to see what it is now, and then we'll look at it in just a couple of weeks and see if anything changes. You're the player of the year race right now for anyone listening. You can see it on CBSSports.com, but the top three is Victor Oladipo, Trey Burke, Otto Porter, Mason Plumlee, and Jeff Withey. That's one through five. But Goodman, who would your All-American team be? And you can do this. I gave Gottlieb this question too. You can do it by position if you want, or you can do it five best overall. I don't really care. I think Parrish prefers position, but your call.
I do too. Okay. Yeah, no, I always go position if you can. Now there's some, you know, I hate looking at All-American teams that have like five guards. I mean, like it just looks ridiculous. Just pick positions. Trey Burke's your point guard, obviously. Victor Oladipo is your two guard, obviously. Otto Porter is your three man. Mason Plumlee is your center. And then it's tough. Then it's tough. I would still go Doug McDermott as my four man.
Okay.
I agree with four of those. My 1, 2, and 3 would be exactly the same. I think my five would be Mason Plumlee, but I could make a case for Kelly Olynyk. And you know what? I might just take both of them and play two bigs and go Olynyk. Olynyk at the four, Mason at the five.
And here's what's nuts about that, okay, is that Zeller actually, his numbers from last year are right on par with this year, but the team around him's gotten so much better, and I think our expectations of Zeller were so high that he doesn't even make either of your lists, and I don't know if he should.
Cody Zeller is hurt by our preseason expectations of him. Everybody wanted him to come out and have this. You know, we are usually impressed by people who improve in a very clear way. So the Olynyk story is great. The Oladipo story is great. Cody is actually a better player this year than last year. And yet, if you ask that question across the country, some people will tell you he's underwhelmed.
It's very bizarre. But Goodman, I mean, you've been kind of the guy that said Zeller's got to be that guy we expected him to be in order for Indiana to win it all, right?
When it matters, he's got to step up. There's going to be a couple games in March that you know Watford is not making shots and Oladipo might be struggling or Yogi Ferrell might be struggling, and Cody Zeller's got to take control of those games, and he'll have matchups that he's able to do so. So he's got to demand the basketball, and they got to get him the ball.
He didn't get that last night, Minnesota. I mean, they had played well, and
he was pretty fired up, man. I mean, like,
awesome.
Watching him last night, that was his Final Four.
Awesome game, and honestly don't know if I can ever remember a college player jumping as high as Rodney Williams when he blocked that three-pointer.
It's a freak.
That's ridiculous. And if you have not seen that highlight or that gif, search for it, because it is insane how high he got. Mutant ability. All right, fellas, good stuff here. Appreciated the half Memphis episode and half regular hoops.
Oh boy!
Great.
Hey, it's been a long time coming, Norlander.
It has, and it was worthy. Trust me, I'm all too aware. Follow them.
Tell your mom. Tell your mom my apologies for the blog. If nothing personal.
No, she understands. She's a big Jeff Goodman fan.
All right, good. And you know what? Don't burn your Memphis gear yet.
Right,
I honestly don't have any Memphis gear. I know that shocks you.
You sure? Come on.
I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. I have none.
If you're a Memphis fan listening to this podcast and are one of the six who have yet to tweet at Goodman, you can at GoodmanCBS. He adores love letters. And Gary Parrish at Gary Parrish CBS is also on Twitter. Follow those fellas. Guys, it was great chatting with you, and we will talk again next week, all right?
Yo, I'll see you later, man.
Sounds good. We'll be back Friday episode. Look forward to that, and we'll talk to you then.